I want to start today by talking about jobs. We both have some sort of tepid news about jobs today, and also some extraordinarily good news about jobs related directly to the Biden administration. And I think it's important to keep in mind that when you have a record of very high level of job creation, at some point it's going to slow down. This is sort of the way the economy works. And there is a lot of focus being put on an apparently negative headline that I think is very important to contextualize. So let's take a look at this kind of in pieces. First and foremost, weekly jobless claims have jumped to 231,000. And this is the highest since August. Now, a lot of this, remember, is in the way you write a headline. The numbers are jobless claims totaled a seasonally adjusted 231,000 for the week ending last week. That's up 22,000 from the week before and the highest number since August 2023. Now, bear in mind that that's about the last 9 months. And President Joe Biden has now been president for more than 3 years. So there is a lot being made out of, this is the worst number for new jobless claims in 9 months. But the bigger picture is really an extraordinary record of job creation, to some degree buoyed by the recovery from the pandemic that is completely external to the Biden administration, to some degree buoyed by global business cycles and things that have nothing to do with Joe Biden. It's really important that this is not a show where I play the political football with the jobs and with the debt and with the deficit and with gas prices. Presidents have some to do with this, but a lot of it is much bigger. But the important takeaway here is that we had a Republican Party and a Republican candidate in Trump and a right wing movement in MAGA that for all of 2020, we were told if Biden wins, the economy will end. You will have a 1929 style depression. No one will be working. The stock market will be in the toilet. You will have no indoor heating, no indoor cooling. I mean, you'll have to flush toilets 10 to 15 times. None of these things happened save the power flushing by Trump. We know that's for whatever reason, and it's the documents or whatever, he's flushing toilets 10 to 15 times. But other than that prediction, none of this stuff has come true. And while the big picture job creation record is very good, we are seeing that not every month can be a record. Now let's move to some very interesting jobs news that relate to this as well. President Joe Biden yesterday touted a Microsoft Artificial Intelligence Center, on the site where Trump's Foxconn deal went completely wrong. This is a major investment expected to create 2,000 permanent jobs and 2,300 temporary union construction jobs to build the center. This is really a big deal because it's in Wisconsin. It's a critical election state. It's a critical state where there is some high tech in Wisconsin, but it is not the state known for high tech. And so this is a big deal in a number of different ways. Joe Biden appearing there and then also giving an interview to CNN's Aaron Burnett, during which he is going for the jugular against Trump, saying, I'm doing it. Trump promised it. He failed. I've never failed. I'm creating jobs. And I think this is an extraordinary way to head into the election in November. I'll explain why in a moment.
In here where we are for Foxconn, he promised 13,000 jobs and only about 1,000 of those actually exist right now. So I know you're promising more than 2,000 union construction jobs and that 100,000 people are going to get trained in AI here. Why should people here believe that you will succeed at creating jobs where Trump failed?
And the funny part is, I mean, we'll let Biden answer it in a moment. The answer is because Biden has succeeded at doing it and Trump failed. It's the proof is simply in the numbers.
He's never succeeded in creating jobs, and I've never failed. I've created over 15 million jobs just since I've been president. 15 million in three and three quarters years. And secondly, Microsoft is a serious player, and they're very much engaged in making sure that they pick this area as sort of the home base for their AI initiative in the nation. And they're gonna do it. And just like, and by the way, well, I shouldn't go into it, but Trump is, he started off with the golden shovels, you know.
For the groundbreaking.
For the groundbreaking. and talked about this being, you know, the eighth wonder of the world. When has he ever done anything he said? I'm not being facetious. Think about it. He started off, he lost, other than Herbert Hoover, he's the only other president who lost more jobs than created in his four-year term. He's, in the way he managed the end of the his last year when the...
So listen, I am with you that this does not exactly reek of effervescence and vigor. I'm with you. But this is a powerful message, because when you look at the polling, economic issues are at the top for voters going into November. Now, some of these are indirectly economic issues, like, for example, healthcare is at the very top in terms of issues that people care about. It is. I don't even know that indirectly. Healthcare is an economic issue because in the United States, it's primarily tied to jobs. And if your job doesn't provide you with healthcare, health insurance, then you either need to go into one of these marketplaces and pay for it. It's economic. Inevitably, it's an economic issue. And so I think that it is very smart for Joe Biden to focus in on issues that are ranking high on voters' list of important issues and issues on which he is strongest. And this is absolutely one of those issues. Now, let me go a little bit further, because I do want to be thorough. And I think it's important not to have this, you know, every president loves to talk, and every elected official loves to talk about bringing jobs back and getting more manufacturing jobs in the United States. And they're now talking about even reindustrialization. No matter who is in the Oval Office, we really do need to have a broader conversation about the big picture feasibility of actually bringing back manufacturing to the United States and this idea of reindustrialization, because there are a lot of difficulties. We can bring back manufacturing and supply chains to the United States. Most people wouldn't actually want what it would mean. If you start manufacturing in the United States, stuff will be more expensive. There's higher labor costs. Two, as an economy, we decided 40 years ago implicitly by outsourcing manufacturing to other countries. You individually might say, no, I'd rather pay more and have the local jobs. Maybe I would, too. But as an economy, we have decided that there is a skills gap. If we were to bring, if we decided we want the higher prices and the domestic jobs, let's bring it all back, we would probably have a shortage of skilled workers in certain manufacturing areas, because for decades now, we've said we're going to outsource those jobs. Global competition. There are other countries other than the ones we are currently manufacturing in, which might be able to offer some kind of in between, where some aspects might be done domestically, but not the actual manufacturing. And so it may prove more difficult than simply deciding we're bringing the jobs back. So my point is, there is a lot more to this idea that every elected official says we're going to bring jobs back. Smarter seems to be to create new jobs. The artificial intelligence center is interesting because this is a new type of job. The manufacturing, the construction jobs will be there temporarily building the facility. So it's important to remember that there's a lot of lip service paid to this bringing back manufacturing jobs. I think that if you told a lot of Americans exactly what it would mean for prices on everything, many Americans wouldn't be so thrilled with it. We hear a lot about facts over feelings. Facts don't care about your feelings from Republicans. And we now have MAGA Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, who is putting forward a bill to ban non-citizens from voting, saying we don't have any evidence, but intuitively we know that illegal immigrants are voting. He feels like illegal immigrants are voting, but we have no evidence of that. And in fact, it's already illegal for undocumented immigrants to vote. I'm going to play a clip for you. This is the epitome of the bottom of the barrel. It's just what we feel stuff from Republicans. The question is hard to hear, but you're going to hear Speaker Mike Johnson say, we know intuitively that undocumented immigrants are voting. I don't really have any evidence, but we just know it.
No. So actually, on the first question, I mean, the answer is that it's unanswerable. That is the problem. States are not allowed right now to prove, if somebody claims on that simple form that they're a citizen, they can vote. They're not allowed to prove whether it's true or not. We all know intuitively that a lot of illegals are voting in federal elections, but it's not been something that is easily provable. We don't have that number.
Right.
This legislation will allow us to do exactly that. It will prevent that from happening. And if someone tries to do it, it will now be unlawful, and the states will have a mechanism to prove whether they are or not.
It is already against the law to vote or to try to vote if you are an undocumented immigrant. Or big picture, if you're just not a citizen, you could be a legal immigrant. If you're not a citizen, you still can't vote, and it would be against the law to try to do so. So I can translate what he's saying. We have no evidence. We can't prove anything. We made it all up. And we, the Republican Party, regularly spend a lot of time on things that do not exist, do not exist. We need a law to stop this really scary thing that we have no proof is happening whatsoever. And remember that we have facts on our side. It's not our feelings versus their feelings. It's multiple state governments have done investigations to find evidence that non-citizens are voting. The Trump campaign hired Ken Block to investigate it. We interviewed Ken Block. Ken Block said, we found no evidence of it. There's just no evidence that this thing is taking place. And so in order to believe that what they are telling us is true, you have to believe that despite all of the efforts to find evidence of it, and despite the fact that it's already against the law for non-citizens to vote, not to mention you can't even get on the voter rolls if you're not a citizen. So what it would require for a non-citizen to vote is to go to a polling place knowing which citizens haven't yet voted and to claim that you are that citizen. There's no evidence that it's happening. And if it were happening, it would be a really stupid way to try to steal an election. It doesn't make any sense. There's no evidence of it. But intuitively, they know that it's happening. Their intuition has absolutely no basis in fact whatsoever. And remember, small government, their principle is we are small government conservatives. Government should only be involved when it is abundantly clear that government must be involved because there is no other solution. You don't even have evidence of a problem, but you're passing a bill which is meant to solve a problem you can't even prove exists. This is another example of how Republicans abandon every single one of their stated principles when it's not convenient. And next week, we're actually going to do a deep dive on this. We've been working on it for a little bit. We are going to do a deep dive on what does conservatism there's no conservatism left in the Republican Party. That's the point. But what does conservatism claim as its top line values? And is the modern Republican Party adhering to those stated values? I'll preview for you that the answer is no, but we're going to do a deep dive and look at all of the examples. So let's hear from a sponsor or two. Literal brainworms for RFK Jr. An incredible story, but real, incredible and real. After this very short break. One of our sponsors today is BetterHelp. Viewers of the show, listeners know I'm a big advocate of therapy. I think it's important to make it more accessible, remove any stigma that might be associated. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. And therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. BetterHelp is therapy done entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. Fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. Switch therapists anytime at no additional charge. I'm a huge believer in talk therapy, and BetterHelp is making it more accessible to more people. You can even find a therapist who specializes in certain areas, which maybe you can't find where you are geographically. There are lots of great benefits to doing therapy online. Get it off your chest. Visit BetterHelp. Go to BetterHelp.com/Pacman Show today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Pacman Show. The link is in the podcast notes. It's important to me that any supplement I take is of the highest quality and freshness, and that's why I've been turning to AG1 for years. Unlike other vitamin brands, AG1 conducts relentless testing for purity and potency. It's tested for 950 contaminants and banned substances, while the industry standard is usually to test for only 10. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, one of the most rigorous, independent quality and safety certifications out there. And the whole reason I drink AG1 is it just is simple. It simplifies everything. It's a scoop a day. I get my vitamins and my minerals, and that's all I need. And the probiotics in AG1 are something I'm particularly glad is there. So AG1 just replaces the vitamin bottles, the digestive aids, all of the things that you might otherwise be taking individually. It's quicker. It's more cost effective than buying everything individually. You can go to drinkag1.com/Pacman to get a free year supply of vitamin D and K, plus 5 free AG1 travel packs. That's drinkag1.com/Pacman. The link is in the podcast notes. The David Pacman Show is primarily made possible by you, our audience, through the membership program. If you're hearing this message, you are not getting the full experience. Sign up at joinedpacman.com and you will very quickly, we're going to do it very quickly too, like Trump used to say, very, very quickly, you will get full access, including access to the bonus show and the commercial-free audio and video feeds of the show. Joinedpacman.com is the place to sign up. We estimate only half of 1% of our audience supports us directly. And if we could bump that up to 1% of our audience, it would indefinitely and fully subsidize the production of the show in perpetuity, making us impervious to the vagaries of the algorithm-based social media platforms, which I think is a good thing. I would love to be impervious. Why not, right? I mean, these days, impervious is great. A literal brainworm ate part of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s brain, but he's fine now. It's actually not a funny story. It's wild that we've been talking about metaphorical brainworms for so long, and an actual worm got into his brain. An incredible story. The New York Times reports, RFK Jr. says doctors found a dead worm in his brain. The presidential candidate has faced previously undisclosed health issues, including a parasite, he said, ate part of his brain. And they tell the story. This goes back to 2010. In 2010, RFK Jr. was experiencing memory loss and mental fogginess, and there was concern about a brain tumor. Went to the doctor. Doctors found a spot on his brain scans and said it's a tumor. And he was scheduled for a procedure with a surgeon, but he got received a call from a doctor who had a different opinion and said, I think it's a dead parasite. I think it's a brain, a worm that got in your brain and then died in your brain after eating a portion of it. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. Interesting, the New York Times points out, that as an independent candidate, he has portrayed himself as the vigorous, athletic and relatively young candidate over Trump and Biden, which is certainly interesting, and regularly showing up and lifting weights or snowboarding, skiing, etc. So it is an interesting thing that he had this health issue. But we are told by his campaign that everything would be completely fine. If you were president, Bess Levin writing in Vanity Fair, everything you need to know. For one thing, his campaign says it won't affect his ability to serve as president. And it does appear as though everything is fine. You know, we often talk metaphorically about MAGA brainworms. This is literal brainworms. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. putting out a tweet about it where he said, quote, I offer. This is wild. He said, I offer to eat 5 more brainworms and still beat President Trump and President Biden in a debate. And then said, I feel confident of the result, even with a 6-worm handicap. As all of you know, I have no interest whatsoever in his campaign as someone I would consider voting for. But these tweets are genuinely kind of funny. So we're glad he's OK. He should be defeated, not because he had a brain worm, but because his ideas are not so good. And all he can really hope to do, quite frankly, is help Donald Trump become president, which, by the way, some people suspect is exactly what he is trying to do. So there is the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. story. When we talk about his brain worms, we are talking about literal brain worms. When we talk about a lot of the MAGA people, they are metaphorical brain worms. And this is two different things. Marjorie Taylor Greene, the reactionary and repugnant Republican congresswoman, is apparently ready to go down with the ship. attempting to remove yet another Speaker of the House. This time it's MAGA Mike Johnson. Her attempt to remove MAGA Mike Johnson going down in flames. Why does she want to remove yet another Speaker of the House? Well, she feels, I don't know if there's evidence, she feels that MAGA Mike Johnson is more working with Democrats in the House than Republicans, willing to work with Democrats to pass Ukraine aid, for example, something that Marjorie Taylor Greene is against. But alas, the House has blocked the resolution, and many of Marjorie Taylor Greene's colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle, not pleased with her. Here she is introducing the motion to vacate the speakership. And she is booed even by her own Republican colleagues. Take a listen to this.
I seek recognition to give notice of my intent to raise a question of the privileges of the House. The form of the resolution is as follows.
Right.
Declaring the office of Speaker of the House of Representatives to be vacant. This is the uniparty for the American people watching.
The gentlelady will suspend. Order. Order. The gentlewoman from Georgia is recognized.
Whereas the House Republican Conference elected Mike Johnson on October 25th, 2023, after 3.5 weeks of trying to decide on a new Speaker of the House.
Mr. Speaker, the House is not in order.
All right. So long story short, she introduced this as a privileged resolution, meaning that it either must be defeated or brought up for a vote within 2 legislative days. And indeed, the House very quickly voting to table the resolution, to table the motion, rather. And it failed completely. 196 Republicans, 163 Democrats joining to end this nonsense. And here is that moment.
On this vote, the yeas are 359, the nays are 43, with 7 answering present. The motion is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
All right. So cheers, because it was indeed defeated. This is the latest attempt from Marjorie Taylor Greene to, I guess, kind of like out MAGA MAGA in some sense. MAGA Mike Johnson, of course, making every attempt to ingratiate himself with Donald Trump, even making a pilgrimage down to Mar-a-Lago a few weeks ago. And Trump looking a little bit distant, I would say, from MAGA Mike during that appearance. And Trump, interestingly, actually waited to see whether this would fail or not before weighing in on it and putting out some generic statement I won't even bore you with about Marjorie Taylor Greene is great, but blah, 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 blah. So listen, I think that there is an attempt being made here. The value of Marjorie Taylor Greene in the House of Representatives is greatly diminished. There was a time before Lauren Boebert was a complete and total joke, when Lauren Boebert was only 90% of a joke as opposed to 100% of a joke. And MAGA Republican Madison Cawthorn was in the House, and there was a bit more strength between the House MAGA movement. It genuinely did appear as though maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene was latching on to some kind of pseudo grassroots contingent, the contingent that ousted Kevin McCarthy from the speakership. But now, particularly with a diminished MAGA movement, with a diminished Trump, while at the same time splitting MAGA, because you've got the non-MAGA part of the House Republicans, then you have the MAGA people that are behind Mike Johnson, and then you have this anti-Mike Johnson sub-MAGA wing. It's all kind of a mess. And just a reminder that taxpayer money, my taxpayer money, yours, your neighbors, all of our taxpayer money is going to this sort of nonsense. And so part of what's on the ballot in November, it is MAGA Trumpism more broadly, and quite literally, it's also Trump himself. But it's also very important to remember that it's this entire package of doing nothing but grandstanding at great expense, wasting my money, flushing my money down the toilet and flushing your money down the toilet. I'm going to be voting against it in November. You vote however you want. All right. After a disastrous week of PR, Kristi Noem's team, I guess, has decided no more interviews. And Dana Bash announcing this yesterday on CNN. Take a look at this. And this little package includes a reminder of how this week has gone very, very wrong.
Governor Kristi Noem has taken hit after hit on television this week about the story she tells in her own new book about how she shot her poorly trained dog and about not really meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, despite saying she did.
Over the last week.
I should not have put that anecdote in the book. I'm not going to talk about my meetings.
But an anecdote indicates that it happened, right?
Did the dog story come up in your conversation with Trump?
I talk to President Trump all the time.
Did you bring up the dog?
Yes, enough, Stuart.
With Trump? Did you bring
up the dog? This interview is ridiculous, what you were doing right now.
When you recorded your own audiobook, you didn't notice
this
passage?
I'm not going to discuss about my meetings with world leaders.
I'm not asking you to. I'm asking you about recording the audiobook.
Did you want to talk about something else today?
Now, Noem had been a top candidate to join Donald Trump's ticket. Here's what Trump himself said about her yesterday.
I like her a lot, so, you know, I don't want to comment on anybody on the list, but she had a rough couple of days, I will say that.
Governor Noem was scheduled to be on this program, Inside Politics, today. Her team reached out to us weeks ago to book her here, and we reconfirmed earlier this week. She abruptly canceled last night. We want to say, Governor, you are, of course, welcome on the program anytime.
Also, Kristi Noem canceling on Fox News because of snow, which is kind of weird. The Daily Beast reporting on that and saying that they cited a snowstorm in South Dakota as the reason why she couldn't do the interview. But at the time, Noem appeared to already have been in New York City. So it's not really obvious why, if you're in New York and scheduled to do interviews in New York, you can't do them because it's snowing halfway across the country. So listen, this is clearly too little too late. It's the right decision. There is no way out of the hole that she dug for herself. She was asked direct questions in every interview, which she refused to answer. She bailed on multiple interviews now. And as bad as that looks, I mean, listen, the press over bailing on the interviews is going to be short. It's a one day news cycle that she's bailing on interviews. She destroyed her shot at being Trump's VP by doing the interviews. So it does make sense. The smart move would have been to cancel the interviews up front and not even start this nonsense on Sunday. But she also may be contractually obligated to do interviews with her publisher in order to promote her book, which I don't know anything about the sales numbers. I hope the book is failing. I saw some choice words in the reviews, but I hope that the book is failing. And she certainly has self-destructed completely and totally. So hopefully, and listen, by the way, I'm not itching to hear from Kristi Noem. I couldn't care less what she thinks. And so I think it's a good thing that we push her out of the national spotlight because her ideas are disastrous. She's a disaster. And hopefully this entire episode, it's going to put her in the dustbin of history, okay, as Ron DeSanctimonious would say. I've had such trouble finding a great razor where I am not cutting myself or getting those nicks on my skin, which are so common with the cheap disposable razors. You have to meet our sponsor, Henson Shaving. Henson actually manufactures parts for the International Space Station and the Mars rover, and they are bringing that exact same precision engineering to the shaving experience. It hurts when you shave because blades extend too far, and thus they wobble slightly. But with their aerospace-grade CNC machines, Henson is able to make metal razors that extend just 0.0013 inches. That's less than the thickness of a human hair, which means a secure, stable blade with a vibration-free shave. It also has built-in channels to evacuate the hair and the cream. No more clogs, no more rubbing your thumb on the razor to get the hair out. I use Henson at home. Shaving is a great experience now. Henson wants to be the best razor, not the best razor business, which means you only need to buy it once and it's awesome. Go to hensonshaving.com/Pacman, add a razor and 100-pack of blades to your cart, then enter the code Pacman to get the 100 blades for free. That is a 3-year supply. That's H-E-N-S-O-N shaving.com/Pacman. Use code Pacman. The link is in the podcast notes. Today, we welcome to the program Dr. Elizabeth Landsverk, who's a dementia and Alzheimer's disease expert, a geriatrician as well. Dr. Liz, it's so great having you on. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to teach about dementia.
So, yeah, I mean, listen, let's start. I think at this point, the two major presidential candidates, Donald Trump and Joe Biden, have seen a number of very confident and boisterous allegations made about their cognition and their state of mind. We talked about a literal brain worm that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Experienced in the early 2010s as well. And maybe you'll have something to say about him. Can you give us just like a brief overview about when we are looking at individuals who we know mostly through media, television, audio? What is it you look for? What is it we can and cannot glean necessarily?
Well, it's a huge topic. I'll try and be brief. When we're talking about, does someone have capacity for an intervention? The question is, what is it? As a geriatrician, often I get asked, do they have financial capacity, you know, in relation to someone who's maybe financially abused, or do they have medical capacity, or can they sign a will? So if you only understand, you know, what assets you have, your house, and who you'd like them to go to, that's called testamentary. Cool. Medical, you have to understand the medical interventions, like, you know, you have an infection in your leg, they want to cut it off. That means you're going to be in the hospital for a while and you're not going to be able to walk on it. Can you repeat that back? The financial is most complicated because you have to understand abstract concepts and reasoning. And basically, I'm taking this as an opportunity to talk to, you know, the home audience. And when I have someone who is acting strangely and isn't taking care of their bills, or they're getting more angry than they used to, or they're just, you know, their personality seems different, then I ask the families to have the person draw a clock, have it say 11:10, and have them calculate 25% of $22.50. Seems really simple. But our society is so conditioned that if you sound socially okay, we think you're okay. Mm. And I've had a number of patients where one gentleman was very successful businessman, but he drank too much and he was getting a divorce. And I could see he wasn't eating. He couldn't take care of the house. He couldn't get groceries. He needed the care. And the lawyer said, well, you can't have that care because, you know, of the divorce settlement. And so they hadn't recognized the other dementia needed the help. And so I said, nope, you've got to make sure that you've, you know, got care for him. This happens all the time. So I'm not going to, you know, point out and say Trump or Biden or RFK has got dementia. I'm going to say what I look for. I look at function. And first, I hear a lot about, you know, Trump got Obama and Biden confused. He got Pelosi and Haley confused. Those are fairly serious because these are the people that, you know, this is his job, is to run for president. And Biden got confused about Mitterrand and Kohl. You know, those are old age changes, you know, where you get the names wrong. What I often look for is, oh, the other bit that I remember hearing about is that Trump was talking about Gettysburg, and he didn't really understand, you know, what the Battle of Gettysburg was for. And
yeah, let me remind the audience on that. It was sort of a seeming non sequitur about Gettysburg, laced with superlatives and hyperbole about, wow, horrible, what about Gettysburg,
beautiful
sort of thing. Yeah,
right. And so you want the president to be able to understand complex international situations and be able to be very focused on what's the best thing to do for America. That said, I think that, you know, Biden has made some stumbles. He's not the most dynamic person around. He never has been. I look at the function of his programs, you know, that they've brought back manufacturing, that brought NATO together, that they are, you know, working to protect Ukraine. He's looking, I mean, the Middle East is extremely complicated. And Hamas, who got money from Russia, you know, attacked Israel and took hostages and killed 1,100 on October 7th, which is Putin's birthday. So there's a lot of really complicated movements. And what I see the team doing is trying to connect with all the players and the Middle Eastern leaders and keep the war from spreading.
So other experts have generically said, as you're sort of pointing out, that some of the things that are publicly noticeable about Trump are more concerning to them when it comes to capacity than what they are seeing from Biden. Generally, do you agree with that or not so much?
Well, so the things that concern me are not understanding, you know, the context of a historical event like Gettysburg, but also when he was under deposition. So what I look for is function. So depositions are great, as opposed to, you know, I guess he was noted to have 30,000 lies. So when he has a rally, you know, whatever he says may or may not be true. So there's one kind of dementia related with alcoholism that's not for him. It's got confabulation where you just make stuff up. But he was in his deposition and they asked him if he'd had any medications or any reason he couldn't answer the questions that day. And he said no. And I've been in depositions as an expert witness, and I know the lawyers go through step by step exactly what you're supposed to say. And right in front of him, he had this, you know, long written out statement about how this was a witch hunt, you know, from Biden.
Yeah.
And his lawyer had to go, read the statement. So he didn't understand the context. So that's concerning, that if he's in a situation where, you know, it's tense negotiations, that he may not be catching the cues. The thing that's challenging, particularly for Trump, is that, you know, and I'm not going to make a pronouncement here. I would say this is someone that should have geropsych testing, which is like 4 to 5 hours long, because you have to see a decline in function from your previous state. So Rudy Giuliani is an easier one, and I'm actually quite worried about him. You know, here's a man who in the 90s brought down the mob. I mean, you have to be on the top of your game to do that. And then just a year or two ago, you know, he was having a presidential press conference at the Four Seasons landscaping parking lot. I mean, that's concerning. I really get concerned about him with these, you know, legal cases, that he is not quite understanding everything that's going on. And when someone doesn't understand the implications of an intervention, in this case, the legal issues, then they don't have capacity for that.
When it comes to go back to something you said about comparing to an earlier baseline.
Yeah.
As a layperson, when I see Trump's speeches from the 2016 campaign and his TV appearances from 2012 and his Letterman appearance from 2005, the dynamicism, the diversity of vocabulary, there's something that seems to be gone from the way that he speaks. I can't discern whether it would be expected based on his age at these different times or whether there's more to it. What do you think?
Well, there can be a diminishment, you know, like Biden is diminished, you know, relative to 20 years ago as well. So I'm not going to, you know, criticize that. What I will say is I watched his campaign rally in Washington, Wisconsin or Michigan, and he was saying things like, hey, I'm only using the teleprompter 8% of the time and 92% of the time I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, what is that about? I mean, a regular candidate would not be. And the other thing about Trump is whatever he's feeling or worried about tends to come out in his speech. And so one of the frontal lobe tasks is it has your reasoning, it has your social filters, so it keeps you from saying things you really shouldn't say.
So this is like an inhibition mechanism of sorts.
Exactly, right. So he's lost some of his inhibitions.
Dr. Liz, you said you wanted to mention something also about RFK Jr. because he's not getting as much attention in, as far as this sort of stuff goes. What's your impression?
Well, so as I said, you know, I particularly look at function, you know, What did Trump do during his presidency? What did Biden do during his presidency? Although these days, I've got to say that the news media has really made things problematic in that, like with Trump, you know, buried Ivana in his golf course. And I looked it up. And in New Jersey, a cemetery is exempt from judicial seizure. So, you know, I talked to someone who watches Fox News all the time, and he's like, that didn't happen. I was like, no, look. So I think that our country is kind of in silos, which is definitely a problem. RFK, he doesn't have, you know, any experience running any big things. This whole question of having a dead worm in his brain, that's usually cysticercosis, and that causes inflammation. And also, you know, he was shooting drugs as a kid, and he got hepatitis C. So that causes scarring. All of dementia is scarring. And mainly it can't be cured, you know, no matter what the MD gurus say, but you can do things to decrease how fast it will progress. And he, RFK said in the 2012 deposition that he had memory loss, long-term, short-term, and he couldn't work as much.
Mm.
But now he's saying that he's all better.
Right.
So that's not how it works. You get, it's kind of like a heart attack. You get, you know, damage to the brain, whether it's from strokes or Alzheimer's or alcohol or head injuries or infections.
So if I understand correctly, you're saying that whatever damage, whatever symptoms he was experiencing from that at the time, these would be sort of permanent changes to the brain.
Yes. So the inflammation from hepatitis C, it's an inflammatory process in the whole body. It can cause changes in the nerves, the brain. Particularly the liver, and the cysticercosis. It looks like there is some scarring definitely in one part of his brain, and that part is just going to stay scarred. I mean, if they treated him with antibiotics, it's going to keep him from getting new infections in his brain. And
right.
So it may just be stable, but you know, that it's not likely. It would be extremely unusual that if, you know, he had cognitive problems and couldn't work very much and earn a living in 2012, that all of a sudden he would be better. I mean, now he's also saying that, you know, Ukraine needs to be denazified. Like, where is that coming from? You know, it's a very strange year.
It is a very strange year, that is for sure. We've been speaking with Dr. Elizabeth Landsverk, a dementia and Alzheimer's disease expert. Dr. Liz, really appreciate your time and insights today.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate the work you're doing.
For a long time, when I had a computer problem, I'd go on YouTube and Reddit and try to figure it out, and it seemed like the advice that is given 95% of the time is download Malwarebytes, and that'll clean everything up for you. So I have been using Malwarebytes in real life for years, long before they became a sponsor, simply because Malwarebytes is way more than just an antivirus. It catches things other antivirus programs miss. With Malwarebytes, you have comprehensive real-time protection against malware, spyware, other malicious attacks that could jeopardize your privacy and personal data. It can detect and remove existing malware already on your devices with its best-in-class free scan, which is something traditional antiviruses lack. And now you can get identity theft protection as part of a bundle to keep your family's personal information safe with live monitoring, alerts, recovery assistance, and up to $1 million in identity theft protection. Malwarebytes has a special deal they're doing just for the David Pakman Show. You can get any Malwarebytes subscription for 50% off. That's half off at malwarebytes.com/Pakman. That's malwarebytes.com/Pakman to get half off your subscription. The link is in the podcast notes. Well, yesterday was finally the treasured day off from his criminal trial for the failed former president Donald Trump. And he's been complaining, this trial is keeping me off the campaign trail. I should be in Michigan. I should be in Wisconsin. I should be in Pennsylvania. I should be west. I should be east. I should be north. I should be south. So certainly yesterday he went out and campaigned, right? Very much wrong. Yesterday, Donald Trump spent the day hosting the people who bought his NFTs at Mar-a-Lago via non-fungible tokens. He had no public campaign and scheduled yesterday, but he did an event with his NFT customers at Mar-a-Lago, and remember the NFTs, an alleged money laundering scam, and welcoming those individuals to his home. We have a couple of clips from the event. At one point, someone asked, can we donate to your campaign in cryptocurrency? Another very juicy potential way to launder money into his campaign, right? Trump immediately says yes, but then says he's actually not totally sure and asking for help. Does anyone know if I can accept crypto?
Yeah, please.
Can we donate to your campaign using crypto?
Yes. If you can't, I'll make sure you can.
Well, I know.
Can we donate to the Trump campaign using crypto? I believe the answer is yes. Is there somebody that can help me with that answer?
This gentleman can help you.
Is the answer yes or no?
The answer is yes.
I love that hat. That's one of the greatest hats.
I like the dash. I like the dash in the middle.
We should have put taking that. It's an NFT, the hat.
Oh.
It's been the greatest NFT ever. So we can do crypto.
We can do crypto.
Okay.
My company can help you with that.
As you can see, first of all, my company can help you with that. The guy who asked wasn't actually looking to donate any money. He was looking to help Trump process crypto donations. Everybody there is grifting. OK, as you can see, it's of critical importance that Trump not be in court so that he can be on the campaign trail or, I guess, at his home doing this stuff. Another bizarre video from this strange event.
About 8 months ago, we had one of these videos. Who was it the last time we came to Mar-a-Lago?
Oh, wow.
That's right. Oh! The best looking people I've ever seen.
Let's go.
They come in and they say,
oh,
yeah, yeah, I can't. I never wanted to leave. In fact, I was supposed to leave about an hour ago and they didn't mind. You know, I have a fake trial going on with these
The trial is fake. The charges are real, but the trial is fake.
News. Fake news.
Horrible people. They drummed up some nonsense. It's a shame for America. It's a shame. But we've never had better poll numbers. Poll numbers are the highest we've ever had.
Notice that the truth, of course, is that Trump is increasingly underwater in some critical swing states with Joe Biden building a lead. It's just not true what he's saying, but he would love to believe it. That's for sure.
Beating crooked Joe Biden by a lot, both in the national polls and in the swing states. We're beating him. I just saw today.
Wrong.
We're leading by a lot in every single swing state. That's the way we have to keep it, because he's the worst president in the history of our country. There's never been a president as bad as this guy.
Right.
And we're going to make sure
Sleepy Joe
in office and they can't cheat like they did last time.
It's funny someone yelling Sleepy Joe. Trump's not using that anymore because he's sleeping at every day of his trial. And then lastly, Trump in another one of these behind the curtain moments, pointing, I guess, like off in some balcony somewhere on a portico somewhere at Mar-a-Lago. There were a couple people shaking hands or doing something. And Trump says, look, where are all my rich people? They're doing deals over there. Take a look. This is sort of like Trump's where's my African-American type moment.
Look, I have all my rich people. Look, see those people? That guy, see, they're shaking hands on a deal. Look. They just shook hands at a $10 billion deal. They're trying to figure out how do they get advertising like that?
Where are my rich people? So a very, very important day off from Trump's criminal trial so that he could hang out with the people who bought his digital trading cards. And certainly I'm sure the judge will see this and say, you know what? It's very, very important that you have the day off to go to a Barron Trump's graduation. So a strange day at Mar-a-Lago. Also a very strange over the weekend for Lara Trump, which I want to talk about. Over the weekend, there was an event, some generic Republican event. You know, doesn't even really matter what it is. And Donald Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, introduced him. And one of the things they did is they celebrated the January 6th criminal rioters, the party of law and order, celebrating alleged and convicted criminals. Many of these individuals have already been convicted. If you didn't know this, and by the way, if you didn't know this, I'm jealous of you. I wish I didn't know it. There is a rendition of the United States national anthem voiced by the rioters. Now, they are celebrating the rioters by calling them hostages. Hostages is the word that they are using for the rioters. And in the midst of introducing Donald Trump, Lara Trump had them play the song. This is a sort of treason national anthem. And by the way, I don't know what the rules are with the national anthem. You know how you're not supposed to modify the American flag. So when you see these thin blue line flags and all of these other perversions of the flag, you're actually violating the flag code. They're very patriotic. They respect the flag, except when they pervert it with their various colors and lines and stripes. I don't know if there's something similar with the national anthem, but I like to call this the treason national anthem. They are celebrating the rioters. Yet another one of their principles, law and order, due process, respect authority, respect the courts, respect the justice system. Another one of their principles, which they abandon like that when it's no longer convenient. The treason national anthem.
About a year ago, the J6 choir and my father-in-law, Donald Trump, worked together to release a song that made liberals cry because it was number one on the Billboard charts.
Does anyone know of a single liberal who cried because of this? If there were any tears, it would be tears for how low the country has sunk with this perversion of a political party.
Called Justice for All, and today I'm going to present him with his Billboard Award with all of you. Would you please help me in congratulating him?
Right. And as you see, there is Trump hinging at the waist, as he often does. He's celebrating alleged criminals and convicted criminals by saying they are actually the victims.
And I said I knew some beautiful words in that song, and I did. And it went to the number one song above Taylor Swift and Miley Cyrus for almost 6 months. And it was an amazing tribute to them. And whenever we play it, I don't know, play it now, it'd be good. Is it possible to play that song right now?
It's the treason national anthem. And Trump is standing there with his hand over his heart and just kind of, you know, hinging back and forth like he often does. God bless the United States. By the way, how awkward is it that Trump just stands there hinged forward the entire time? Right. All right. So you you get the picture there. So listen, we are going to do a segment about all of the principles that these people ascribe to themselves, but they have actually abandoned completely and totally. Of course, law and order. And as you see that here, defending alleged and convicted criminals, they're for law and order until all of a sudden it's inconvenient for them and inconvenient for Trump. Respect for institutions until those institutions are completely and totally inconvenient for them. Debt and deficit. Oh, we've got to keep the debt low and blah, 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 until they get into power and they completely and totally blow up the debt and the deficit. Personal responsibility until all of a sudden they are tempted to be held responsible for something that they did. So we're going to go through all of this in a segment next week. But no surprise to anybody that we continue to see the defense of alleged and convicted criminals and an attack on the justice system that is prosecuting Trump, while at the same time saying it is the Democrats and the left who are the lawbreakers, and it is the left and the Democrats that ignore due process and law and order. More of the same. We have a voicemail number. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. Here is a caller who just can't take the RFK brainworms situation. Take a listen to this.
All right, I know you have like 3,000 of these voicemails, but please, I hope to God that you hear mine. But here's the thing. Dude, have you heard that RFK has literal brainworms or did or whatever? I've never heard that term before until I started watching your show. And then to see on CNN this morning that RFK has worms in his brain, it's just, you can't make this stuff up. Absolutely amazing. I sincerely hope that you comment on it. All right. Have a good one.
Yeah, we did. I commented on it earlier. And you know what? A ton of people wrote to me about it. We're talking about a serious medical issue. Like, I simultaneously, as a thing, we don't make fun of conditions and medical issues on this show. And also the fact that he had a brain worm, when what we talk about in politics colloquially is people that are afflicted by so-called brain worms. I understand the irony. I understand that there is something there that is of interest to people. But the story just taking off and dozens of emails coming in about it. So we did talk about it earlier in the show. All right. We have such a great bonus show for you today. Most of the customers of FTX are going to get all of their money back after the entire Sam Bankman-Fried catastrophe. They are mostly going to get their money back, which is a great thing. Secondly, the Taliban has confirmed we will punish adulterers with stoning, especially women. What does this do about the perception that some have about the Taliban, which, by the way, we'll talk about why people have the perception they have. But the Taliban affirming yes on stoning for adulterers, and a Georgia appeals court is going to has granted Donald Trump's request to consider the dismissal of Fani Willis from his criminal case. A lot of things seemingly going well for Trump from the legal standpoint this week. We will discuss what this means for the charges against Trump in the state of Georgia, which are otherwise considered to be very, very serious. Make sure you have access to the bonus show by signing up at joinpacman.com.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Right. And you can use the coupon code SAVEDEMOCRACY24 to get the bonus show and all of the other great member benefits at a discount. And remember that you can get my, I held up the wrong book. You can get my latest children's book. You should see the book I accidentally held up. You can get my latest children's book, Think Like a Voter, A Perfect Gift for an Election Year, at davidpakman.com/book. Make sure to leave a review. And finally, I am also writing a weekly written piece taking one idea from the show that week, turning it into a written piece that you can share with those who prefer to read rather than watch. It's free. Just get on my newsletter at davidpakman.com. And of course, you can also choose to support the written work directly by grabbing a Substack premium newsletter subscription. So much going on. I'll see you on the bonus show. I'll be back here tomorrow.